Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Hey, it's Fran from Chicks in the Office. It's peak summer. One plan is turning into five, but trust, I'll be wearing Abercrombie to all of them. Catch me in their Sloan tailored pan at work and then the happy hour right after. The Dylan dress for dinner plans when you want something easy but still put together. And of course, their denim. Because Abercrombie denim just works, no matter the plan. Keep up with the pace of summer without overthinking it. Shop in the app, online, and in stores.
The Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 290. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Trill Ballins. Happy first NFL Sunday of the year. As always, at least two of three of our teams lost. So that's par for the course, 290 episodes in. Ken Jack, the winner today, though.
I was, and me and Trill just determined this was the exact same thing that happened last year. So last year, Browns lost, as you know, Jeff, and the Chargers played the Colts, which I forgot, but the Chargers beat the Colts. And so I always want to know, you guys are 0-1. So par for the course of probably all three of our teams having another shitty season.
Well, we didn't record on, actually, what happened 2 years ago?
I know 2 years ago, I don't know.
Oh, the Browns tied, the Colts lost, and the Chargers lost. So it's been worse.
Yeah, they lost to a good team. I remember that.
Colts lost to the Bengals, and the Browns tied. So, it's always... always at least two losses.
If we were doing this podcast back in 2005, the Colts would have won.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm still living in the Peyton Manning era. Reebok jerseys, high top Pumas.
The Colts did win. That is correct.
If we were doing this podcast in like 2007 and it was the playoffs, then Eric Weddle probably would have picked off Peyton Manning and returned it for a touchdown. Yeah.
No, the Colts would go 13-3 or 14-2 and then get bounced out in the
They'd
make it through the wild card, or they'd catch a bye, and then they'd lose in the divisional to Billy Volek.
What's going on other than the old pigskin?
How much? I watched Dune over the last five nights.
Jeez.
Yeah, I was like, why?
You watch in Quibi increments? It's not
pretty
that
much.
Long.
Yeah. No, I mean, because I start falling asleep when I get 30 minutes in. So I kept going it, into 30 minute increments. And I started it by watching it saying, there's no way this could be as bad as people make it seem like it is. And it is, it's very bad. It's not a good movie.
I don't hate it. I don't think it's horrendous.
No, it's horrendous.
Really? So, Kendrick and I
disagree too. Yeah.
Are right around the same area. He is higher than me. I have it below average.
I just think the amount of exposition and the internal monologue stuff is the corniest shit I've ever seen in a movie.
He tried really hard, I think, to be loyal to the book, and that didn't pay off at all because that doesn't lend itself well, the book, to this, I would say, the screenwriting experience.
Probably wouldn't go over well with other directors, but you'd almost respect it if Denny, before the next one, like, what if you're just like about to watch it and then like his face just pops up and he's like, look, I'm not going to build it into the movie, but here's some exposition you guys need to know before you go into this movie. I'm just going to let you know. There's three planets and then there's these two families and shit's going to go down.
That's what you're watching. That's why you pay the big bucks to watch Dune. You get to see Sting. Is Sting going to be in this one? I don't know. Maybe.
There were cool parts of that movie.
Sting is good, I thought.
No, it wasn't so much any of the performances I liked. It was, you know how I bitched about old sci-fi movies not having scale and scope? I thought that this one was okay. That wasn't the proper diagnosis of it. Like, especially when they went out of that big ship so they could fold space, and it was just like this intricate, you know, detail on the space. That was neat. That was like cool stuff. And then the rest, you know, just whatever.
The idea, or I think the vision that Lynch had, far outpaced the technology available to him, because a lot of that really looked like shit.
Well, you know, David Lynch also, I was reading up on like what kind of what went wrong, and I think he didn't like read the book. He didn't give a shit. Like, that's David Lynch. He's just this guy. You know, the weirdest part about David Lynch,
I'm gonna make a movie about Dune.
He has a regularly occurring role, or had a regularly occurring role on The Cleveland Show.
Mm-hmm.
As the bartender. Weirdest thing. It's like Seth MacFarlane just like, look, I love Twin Peaks. You want some work? I'm not going to be involved in The Cleveland Show. That's why nobody likes it. But
another Dune alum, Patrick Stewart, has a recurring bit on American Dad. One of the funniest random characters in an animated show.
Yeah.
In Avery Bullock. So who knows?
What did you do this weekend, Jeff? Do you drink some matcha?
No, never. Mm. By the way, pause. We are reviewing I'm Thinking of Ending Things, which is probably the hardest I've had in terms of time trying to understand a movie since we did the podcast. And then we're going to rank, inspired by Ken Jack talking about the early 2000s hit clips. We're going to be talking about five gadgets and things that we've always wanted that we never got. But I just watch football. I very much enjoyed football being back. I liked it. It was nice. And then
of normalcy.
Yeah, there were some people who, look, I get it's political and there's a lot of health stuff, and it's ugly when you get into the weeds, but I just like turning off the noise and just watching the football. It was nice.
I think I want to like ascribe behaviors to people, but I feel like I will admit to you, I will complain about like people not being as safe as they should, but at the same time, hypocritically watch NFL football.
Oh yeah.
So I'm not going to get away with it. It's there. It's comforting. It's chicken soup for the soul. Like the old books in the 90s that I'm convinced were just made up stories.
Yeah, absolutely. Those were all fake.
There's pre-internet, so nobody could really fact check anything. It's like Janice S. writes a story about a dog finding its way home after 8,000 miles or whatever from Nova Scotia. You can't, you know, got away with it. It was 96. What are you going to do?
Chicken Soup for the Soul, bottom five book cover.
Never read it.
Chicken Soup fonts, awful. It's just one of the worst design covers in the history of books.
Chicken Soup for the Soul was pretty much your mom's Facebook feed before she knew that was her Facebook feed. That was where moms and grandmas went for that type of like wholesome, share this, you know, heartwarming story entertainment. My mom had it. That's how I read it. It's really easy to digest.
I don't even know what it's about. I associate it with the Sister to the Traveling Pants.
They're super short stories that are like feel good stories that are supposedly true stories, but there's really no way to know that. Maybe there is. Maybe a quick Google would answer that.
They have other ones too, if you're not interested in Ken Jack. They have Chicken Soup for the Preteen Soul, Chicken Soup for the Soul, Messages from Heaven, Chicken Soup for the Grandma's Soul, Chicken Soup for the Dog Lover's Soul, Chicken Soup for the Kid's Soul, Chicken Soup for the Soul, Find Your Happiness.
That reminds me of Always Sunny.
Which one?
Chicken Soup for the Kid's Soul.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Gotta pay the troll toll to get in this boy's hole. No, it's soul.
Oh, never mind. They made a lot of money. The Dummies people, those books are still going strong, I think. And they always... And you know in your mind that it's always probably the worst book you can buy about a subject, but it's always there and it's just familiar, right? Mm-hmm. And you know at least you'll learn something from it. So if you're getting into woodworking, you see Woodworking for Dummies, there's got to be a better woodworking book out there, but that's in Barnes & Noble. It's right there. It's $19.95.
When I was in sixth grade, I got in a lot of trouble because I learned Photoshop. And I made like an NFL draft guide. I love the NFL draft. I made like an NFL draft guide, and I learned how to Photoshop the For Dummies thing and have it say NFL Draft For Dummies. And I printed out like a 300-page thing of just rankings and player profiles, all color ink in sixth grade, and just got eviscerated. Just didn't.
At school or at home?
Big trouble. Oh, in the library at school.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was. they did not like that. But
see that, and that's
well
that's
done where, Photoshop.
But that's where the education system's fucked up. Because
printer ink?
No. Well, I mean, like, yeah, it was on a budget, right? But also, like, if you see like a sixth grader taking the initiative to like Photoshop something and print rankings and try to compile a book, you might say that that person is creatively inclined. And you might want to help them out to follow their passions. But instead,
here, read Lord of the Flies, you dumb bitch. Stop fucking trying to do something.
But then you
creative.
Have that moment in like college, at least for me, like broadcast school. And that was like what I went to school with, like sports journalism, did like degree and shit. Though, I mean, ended up not. It got me connections. So I don't want to say it was a waste of money. It cost an ass load of money and I'll be paying for the rest of my life. But there was that moment where you're like, God, fuck all those teachers that were really mean to me about certain things. So yeah, fuck the idiot librarian who didn't like that I printed out 300 pages of the NFL draft.
What if they would have like encouraged your passions and then you would be the next Mel Kiper? Like,
yeah,
that
see?
Was the separate path your life was going to take. If someone was like, wow, this book's really good. This is really useful information. Hey, you printed from football.yahoo.com.
Yes, young man, here's a slice of pumpkin pie. We think we found your future. You no longer need to go to math class.
I hit control P on ESPN.com and they're like, this kid's a genius. My word.
I was back when you were excited for the ESPN power rankings. I remember I got excited for the ESPN power rankings. Those. Yeah, it came out every Tuesday. You're just like, hell yeah, power rankings.
One more football story. I also obviously liked fantasy football and I had this big binder of research that I brought on a trip with me. We went on a baseball trip with my two friends and their two dads and my dad between fifth and sixth grade. And we had our car broken into on the Baltimore stop. We went to like 12 ballparks and they stole a bunch of stuff, but there was two backpacks. There was one with a GameCube and all my games and like a bunch of electronics. We had a TV in the back seat. And then there was another backpack with just fantasy football information and they stole the fantasy football backpack.
They're smart.
The disappointment to find they ripped that backpack open and it was like a trapper keeper full of Dante Culpepper first round. Just absolute waste of smashing the car window.
They definitely 100% did not read it and just assumed it was like some adult's tax information or something. They're like, oh, what is this adult work?
Jamal Lewis, the universe, round two.
The universe was conspiring to keep you from being a tertiary writer on ESPN Insider.
You're right.
Like both dishing out draft picks and fantasy draft picks behind the paywall.
Where you click on it and it says must pay to see Jeff's opinion. And then you click on it. And all it is like Chargers should trade for quarterback.
I wouldn't know. I've never once paid for ESPN Insider.
No, never. I never will.
That's the most insulting thing in the entire internet for me is the fact that ESPN probably makes such a small amount from Insider yet still insists they do it.
Mm-hmm. They used to lock up juicy hot stove rumors behind that.
Paywall. Yeah, dude, you want Greg Easterbrook's take on
that? Could be a fake name.
How high the sock should be on the players? I can't remember. He might have been Sports Illustrated. I can't remember. I just remember the glory days of sitting down that work computer in 2008, reading the power rankings, reading the Tuesday morning quarterback. We're in the Peter King column, 35 things I think I know.
Oh, I forgot about that. I used to read them on the train.
Dumpy ass motherfucker that guy is.
Peter King. Stinks. Both of them. Both Peter Kings are horrible.
Yeah, that was a trivia question the other day. This same name, different people. One is a New York representative. The other is a dumpy NFL columnist. Ken Jack got it.
Both suck.
Pete King. Though Peter King all-time tweet, so...
I've always thought Robin Williams' tweet is amazing.
I've always thought Peter King was charming in his like narrow cone vision of the world he saw.
It's very narrow.
Well, yeah, but it's
horse blinders on his big face.
Yeah, but they're like all those riders are like blinders that's been applied to them willingly by the league they're covering. Because, you know, one is like you gotta play nice to get the access. So I certainly understand that, right? But two, it's like I feel like after you do that for a while, you start to then become like a mouthpiece for like said organization. And I think that's natural. But I think there's a charm to like Peter King where, you know, that Robin Williams tweet, you could just make that. You wouldn't think anything of it because you're fucking like, oh, everyone loves Robin Williams. Like, no, yeah, this guy's crying because of it. Sad. Mm. Duh. Good tweet.
I'm sticking with Dumpy.
What was the Applebee's?
No, he was like Milwaukee. You know,
is that a restaurant?
Yeah, he was like.
I just assumed he seems like an Applebee's. No, he's a Chili's guy, maybe.
I don't think maybe Applebee's. I don't think their beer would be good enough for him. I feel like you'd find a Gordon Biersch.
I don't even know what that is.
Never been to a Gordon Biersch?
I don't even know what that is. It doesn't sound like English. Gordon Biersched?
Biersch, like German word, Biersch, or like sounds German, looks German, Biersch. I don't know if
it's like a beer hole thing.
Not really. It's just one of the, you know, it's one of those microbreweries, the, you know, upscale casual dining microbrewery type joint that probably.
Okay, this looks pleasant.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how they're doing. I don't know who owns them. Maybe Landry's.
Probably Gordon Biersch. You got to think, right?
Gordon? No, Gordon Exeter, man. Yeah, Gordon Exeter.
He got Ray Kroc'd.
No, he willingly dumped out shares. Now he lives off of the TPC Sawgrass down the street.
This episode brought to you in part by BarkBox. Actually, if you listen closely, you could probably hear my dog squeaking a BarkBox toy, which would be it's a small plush mouse with a squeaker inside of a large, small sweatshirt.
Does your dog wear a bell?
No.
So you don't step on her?
Actually, she doesn't. Tiny. She is very tiny and she does sneak up a lot.
You should put a bell on her, dude. Big old bell that weighs like half her weight.
Like
prison chain thing?
Like scare the shit out of me. I just turn around and just stand in there. Because we know she doesn't have a collar on unless she's outside. She has a harness on. So very pampered dog.
Put a literal ball and chain on her. You're psycho.
I will not dress her up. Won't do that. Won't ever do that. But I'll give her BarkBox toys. And BarkBox, they're a dog-obsessed company. And they're devoted to making sure your dogs are happy. My dog, 2 BarkBoxes in, incredibly pleased. 6 toys, 2 chews, and 4 bags of treats combined between 2 boxes. And a bunch of weed toys. Not like actual weed, but it's like this big blunt. It's a plush blunt.
Damn, the dog knows they're doing something cheeky.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the toy, for me, far too big. Sent it to a friend. They loved it. The toy was literally bigger than my dog, so I couldn't do it. It's a very small Shih Tzu. But yeah, the best day of the month when the BarkBox, right? We call people at work say that too. A BarkBox, a big cat is one. He's like, the dog now knows when the BarkBox arrives. Dogs are smart. For a limited time, go to barkbox.com/LCB and get a free weed themed toy in your first box when you sign up. You got a bigger dog, I'm telling you, these are great. And then if not, the BarkBox itself is awesome. The fall one's great. Small pumpkin spice latte is plush. It's cool. That's barkbox.com/LCB for a free 420 themed toy in your first box when you sign up and much more. Join the pack today. I'm a big fan. Big fan of BarkBox. Fast and Furious. We've talked about this before. But it's like, this is the 10th time it's been confirmed, right?
Mm-hmm.
That they're going to space.
They're going to space.
Every 2 months, someone confirms they're going to space. But yeah, now they're like very much. So an interview, this is from Screen Rant, an interview with, on the SiriusXM program, the Jess Cagle show, Sirius star Michelle Rodriguez. Said this, oh, no way. How did you guys find that out about space? See what happens. People start talking behind the scenes. When a movie doesn't come out and forget about it, things get out. Nobody was supposed to know that, even though we have. I'm not lucky enough to hit space. We did get a female writer and showed a lot of love. I think on this one, thanks to Justin Lin, we were able to find a little bit more attention and love for the girls in the movie, blah, et cetera, et cetera. But she was talking about space.
What are they going to do in space?
Right, Jacob, obviously.
Yeah, but are they gonna go to the moon? Are they gonna go to a base? Are they gonna go to a space station? Are they gonna
space
stay on
station?
I think they're gonna do a space station. Sure. It's gonna be. I think it's going to be like a SpaceX knockoff company that gets them there.
No, I think it's gonna be literally. I wrote this in the blog. I did on it. I think it's gonna be literally SpaceX. I think, like, for some ridiculous reason, Vin Diesel is going to be like, yeah, I have a friend I can contact, and it's Elon Musk.
He's absolutely going to be in the movie.
Yeah, and he's going to say, like, yeah, we met at a mechanics convention in fucking Bern or something stupid like that. And the SpaceX rocket is going to be what he takes to the moon.
The Tesla scene SpaceX is going to be super fucking lame because of how quiet those cars are. It's going to be very funny. But it doesn't, you're right, it doesn't sound like all of them are going, just like one or two, because Michelle Rodriguez is like, no, I'm not going to space. So
it's a B-plot in space?
I guess.
Or, you know, they're going to shoot them up there to film via SpaceX? No. That's
No. She means their character's not going to.
Yeah,
space.
No, I didn't know if they're going to, you know, do a little stunt. Do a little Vin Diesel's low, low orbit,
Tom Cruise
whatever.
Has the,
yeah, Tom
Cruise. I don't know. I mean.
Yeah. I do feel like Elon Musk will be in it, but I think a good way to set it up would be to, like, have another bad guy in terms of, like, him, like, running a evil SpaceX-type corporation.
They already have two bad guys. They have the, what's it called? Charlize Theron playing Cypher, and now
the third bad guy.
John Cena as Jacob.
Fourth
yeah,
bad
brother guy. Bad guy.
Jacob Toretto. Yeah. What the fuck?
It's going to be, this is what everyone wants, but I also say be careful what you wish for, because it could also, like, not be all that interesting. I find shit rooted in cars and driving and chase scenes and the creativity that goes behind those. That's still more interesting to me than what they're going to do in space. Not saying the series has been car chases or whatever, but, like, that seems like we're nearing the end of this, like, main line of the franchise, that they're busting this one out now.
Mm-hmm. Well, car chases are the best part.
Not the maybe four more movies, right? So still life.
One of the funnier things I saw that came out of this was Seth Rogen said that he had met with he was a producer or something on one of the Fast and Furious movies, and he said he was, like, talking to Justin Lin and said, like, yeah, what's next? You guys are going to go to space? And Lin, like, looked him right in the eye and was like, not yet. It was 10 years ago. He was already that confident this series was going to go to space.
It would be funny if the rocket took off, but the Challenger and Vin Diesel's character, aka Dom Toretto, was like, it was like just tethered to the rocket and just following it via a chain. And he was just riding in the Challenger on his way to space.
And there's no shuttle. It's like it's the fucking whatever Saturn rocket. And then just like the fucking, his Challenger's just
yes.
duct taped to it.
It's just the Challenger standing straight up on end with two rockets on the side, just like the space shuttle, that are both going to drop off when they've successfully launched the Challenger where it needs to be.
Oh my God. I can't wait for it. This is going to be so fucking good.
I wonder if there's going to be a line about, like, getting a passport. I feel like that'd be a funny line
for space.
For space.
Yeah. Like something where, like, what's his name? Tyrese.
Yeah, Tyrese Gibson.
Like, his character is like, oh, I got to get a passport. And then, like, Ludacris' character is like, dumbass, you don't need a passport for space.
Oh, I thought it would be, I think you're right, but I think you're wrong on how it'll work. I think it'll be like, maybe they'll strap the bad guy to the rocket, and Tyrese be like, don't forget your passport, bitch, and then hits him, like slap something on him, and then he gets shot off into space. Or
he's going to fire someone out of an airlock and be like, start singing Take Your Breath Away. Like, he's gonna do some dumb shit like that. I can already feel it in my
bones.
What
if Steven Tyler was in the movie? Oh, I mean, have you seen the new Kit Kat commercial where there's, like, a parachuting guy that lands on a Kit Kat? I thought that was, I was looking down. I thought it was a Steven Tyler Kit Kat commercial. It's not.
I thought they're parodying him pretty. Like, are they parodying him, right?
I don't think so. I think it's just a parachuting guy landing on a Kit Kat, but he does sound like Steven Tyler, and I thought it
was the Dr. Pepper guy definitely is, right?
Yeah.
The Justin Guarini. Yeah, he's just trying to be a hair metal guy.
Yeah, but the scarves that are there, those are Steven Tyler scarves. Those aren't like Def Leppard scarves.
Yeah, but Steven Tyler's like,
why see I got these scarves?
Steven Tyler is one of the few that emerged victorious from the hair metal era, even though they weren't really hair metal at all. But you know, it was essentially like
playboy metal.
Yeah, it's such, you know, I think the genre is like dudes with long hair and a guitarist with brown hair who wears sunglasses, and that's the minimum criteria. And you can add on however you want. You said David Lee Roth in there. Well, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
He had quite the voice, man.
They all did, man. It was a good time. It's how I came to be.
So I don't know if we've have we reviewed like a non Uncut Gems Adam Sandler movie on this pod.
I feel like no, right?
I don't think
Magnificent Seven. We didn't do it, right? Or did we?
We didn't do Mag 7. Oh, did we do Murder Mystery?
No, it was Ridiculous 6, whatever.
I don't think... No, Ridiculous 6 was 2015.
True.
So I don't think we have. If we did miss Murder Mystery, that one doesn't count. This is
no, like we did Murder Mystery, but I think it was like so brief, we were just like, yeah, it was all right.
So we're talking Hubie Halloween, which is... This is what Adam Sandler signed his deal with Netflix for, movies like this. Hubie Du Bois thanklessly spends every Halloween making sure the residents of his hometown, Salem, celebrate safely and play by the rules. But this year, an escaped criminal and a mysterious new neighbor have Hubie on high alert when people start disappearing. It's up to Hubie to convince the police and townsfolk that the monsters are real, and he can only stop them. It's the narc boy who cried wolf. That's the movie. He just narcs on his townsmate, and then finally something bad happens and no one believes him. Kevin James is the cop, and by that, I mean they found a fake beard for Kevin James and they threw it on him.
No, that's his real beard. That's the one he has from the Nazi movie that he was in.
Where really?
Nazi. Yeah.
It looks so fake.
He shaved his hair now. So the hair on his head is fake.
Okay. Maybe that's why. Yeah. A lot of name stays in it. Kevin James, Julie Bowen, Maya Rudolph, Ray Liotta, Steve Buscemi, Rob Schneider, Kenan Thompson, Tim Meadows, Shaq.
You don't have a friend that's half as good as Adam Sandler is to his friends.
Nope, like, never.
For all the shit talking we do about Adam Sandler movies, I do think it's cool. He's taking care of his people.
He made a movie just for a free vacation.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Imagine how pissed.
Yeah,
how
true.
Pissed do you have to be if you're Bowen right now? You're like, hey, I didn't get the call in fucking two decades, and you call me for a movie that's not in Hawaii, you asshole.
No, but
New England, you fucker.
But I think Bowen, like that's the thing where like Adam Sandler's like, hey, anytime you want, you come in this movie, but you're also doing the Modern Family thing. Wait till that gravy train. Wait till the wheels have fallen off that one. I'll bring you into the fold on this money making enterprise once that's done.
Money making machine. Is it a bad sign that this movie doesn't take place in Hawaii, even though by definition of the script it shouldn't?
I don't know. I thought it looks like I kind of enjoyed it. Honestly, I like his Hubie character. It's like the water boy mixed with Billy Madison. Mixed with little Nicky. Well, I mean, all his characters are like that anyway. But I prefer that to like his like brash dad character.
Grown
ups.
Yeah, true. No, I agree with that. Like the goofy roles.
Or like Happy Gilmore. It's like in that vintage of Sandler.
You know what he did say after or right around the award season? He said, if Uncut Gems doesn't win any awards, I'm going to make the worst movie ever made.
I don't think this is that, quote. Though. I think
there,
it looks pretty fucking bad, man.
There was a moment in this trailer where I went, you know what? Might not be the worst thing. And then he shot a fucking grappling hook out of his thermos.
The thermos.
And then he hit the tree and fell down and hurt himself. And that's it. Like every bit of goodwill the trailer had built up for me, completely gone, completely out the window. The grappling hook out of the thermos did it for me.
I didn't really get what the threat was supposed to be in this movie.
No, neither did I.
I don't think monsters
of some kind.
Yeah, it was just like it was like a dude, creepy dude. Was it Steve Buscemi? Is that the threat?
Yeah, he's the old creepy guy, right?
Yeah, but it seems like, you know, maybe he's got a little more up his sleeve. Maybe
it feels like a bit of a mystery, this movie.
I feel like Adam Sandler likes Halloween, though, and my evidence for this is Hotel Transylvania.
He did the
stereotypical Adam Sandler voice in the first thing he says in the trailer on the bicycle. He does like he's got a very weird voice too for the movie.
He does. That's not his best, I would say.
It's like a
combination of fucking Billy Boucher and I guess Billy Madison, like you were saying, Troll. It's like
you know yeah. he you know, finally they're like, all right, what's the character? He's like, I'm going to finally do Hubie Halloween. They're like, no, please don't. I'm going to do Hubie Halloween. I got to do it.
Oh, I've been working on Hubie.
Oh, working on Hubie. I've been trying to get Hubie Halloween to work for years.
The Adam Sandler SNL, though, was the funniest SNL that's happened in the last 5 years that I can think of.
It was very good.
I just want to be clear. I'm not shitting on Adam Sandler, because I think he's made it very clear that he's going to do what he likes to do. And this is it. This is what he likes to do. And families
love this movie, man. There's people a market for it.
People like this. And that was the thing.
I'm very excited to review it.
We shadow over the wrong Missy, but the amount of people I've talked to in like real life that like that movie, it's very high.
It's sickening.
It makes me upset. And like you know me, I'm fairly understanding of almost every movie opinion, because I think that's a more fun way to talk movies. Like, maybe that's not like the sexy clickbait hot take way to do it. However, the wrong Missy is a deal breaker for me. I loathe that movie. I hate that movie.
It's distressing, man.
If you want to ruin my day.
It makes me question my reality, though, when so many people like something like that, where I'm like, I am the asshole here, by the way, that I don't like this. Something's wrong with me for not liking this, because everybody else seems to enjoy it.
The Browns could have lost 60-0 today, and then I could have walked into another room and heard Hellstar, and that would have ruined my day.
The Hellstar baby with the things over her eyes.
Wait, was that? Who was the boss? Wasn't Craig T. Nelson, right? It was like Dollar Store Craig T. Nelson.
Yeah, it was a guy that looks like him, but wasn't him.
I forget who it was. It was probably
it's
irrelevant.
It's one of those Billy Madison guys. It's one of their Happy Madison guys.
Craig Z. Nelson.
Craig S. Nelson.
Jeff Pearson. He's been in stuff.
Jeff T. Pearson.
By the way, so in my rewatch, my very slow, uninteresting rewatch of House of Cards, I finally hit season 3 with America Works. Oh boy. That's where the show started sucking. That storyline sucked.
The politics are so unbelievable on that show going back. And
reappropriating the FEMA funds to that show took a turn from being like a really fucked up inside DC like media like backroom dealings to this is about a bill I'm trying to pass, and it just absolutely lost me. I may stop, because I kind of wanted to get through the season I never watched, like over the span of months. I think I'm done. Yeah,
don't just do it.
Him not worth it. Him menaging with his security guard and his wife, though, was like an all-time scene. I was like, oh,
that all threw me for a fucking loop. I agree with you.
I like that. When that happened, I'm like, damn, these people, like, everything is power. No, everything is sex.
Everything
is sex. Except sex. Sex is about power. I don't remember that. Is that from House of Cards?
And then they had the menage a trois with Kathy Durand. I do declare.
Well, I do say.
May I call you an Uber?
His bedroom is as hot as a fox in a forest fire.
You have a Roman wop for me. Thank you, darling. Kathy Durand, BB. What is she even her position?
She's just Secretary of State.
Does he give her that position?
Because I remember he finds a way to get the dad from Smart House to get in trouble for something, and he doesn't get the appointment, and then Kathy Durand gets it. And she's one of the few mainstays throughout all the seasons, her and Mahershala Ali.
The best part is I was one of those people that, like, when I was watching it, I was like, you know what? Politics probably really are like this. I think maybe they're like it in the sense that, like, everything happens behind the scenes and you never really know the full story around what it's happening, and everyone's got their own motives and it's in it for itself. Like, maybe that's true. But I think it's probably a lot dumber than the shit that happens in this show. I think it's probably just like
much less nuanced.
Or just like the people are much more boring than the fleshed out characters in House of Cards.
Mm-hmm. I did see the guy who plays Doug Stamper in the newer IKEA one time, though. So
say Michael something. I like that actor a lot.
He's Fuck.
He's really good in House of Cards too. It's Michael something. I don't remember.
He's got that good, like, bald guy shaved crown look. you know,
him like and Tucci. Corey Stoll, who's also in House of Cards.
Yeah. So but again, like, that first season pulls it off too.
Tucci pulls it off too, where like he doesn't always shave the full thing. He's got the crown around his head that sometimes Caesar. Has a little bit of the, yeah, like a little bit of the growth on it, but it's not like I'm actively trying to grow it out. Like not everybody looks good like that.
Michael Kelly.
Yeah. He was fantastic in that show. Rachel Brosnahan got her start on there, right? Or she's probably been in shows before that, but that was like the first thing I remember.
She was the call girl. That's Doug Stamper's entire basis of his storyline is based around. There was a lot of
Zoe Barnes.
A lot of people in that show.
Zoe Barnes,
you are indespicable. I just cannot deal with you, Zoe Barnes. I'm gonna bush you on a little train track.
It's like we always said in Gaffney, South Carolina. Anytime you can push somebody onto a train track to kill them, you got to do it.
Let me be clear on something here too. By the way, the only reason I started rewatching the show is because you, for some bizarre fucking reason, referenced
Kathy Durant,
Secretary of State Kathy Durant, who was a recurring character consistently, but like very much a side character.
The prostitute got more airtime than
many people had more airtime. The security guard had
the
more
giant airtime. Peach in Gaffney had more airtime.
Yes.
Oh, that always stuck out to me because it's like somebody was watching the NBA and like I'm trying to come up with a character name. Let's see, Kevin Durant, Kathy Durant. Got it.
I wonder if we can like line that up with anyone else. There might be other. I don't remember any other name other than.
I remember as a boy in Gaffney, my father would take me to the gigantic peach thing that exists in real life, but has been put in Gaffney for some reason in the show's universe. Why not just have us be in the city in Georgia that this comes from? Would it be too close to Jimmy Carter's backstory and people would not believe me as a character? I don't know.
Every summer, you know, we are staying in Gaffney. We go on out to that big old huge peach, and we all fuck it. Take turns. There's a big old there's a line. We just take turns. Your cream pie. This is a terrible impression. I'm giving up on it. In the ejector scene.
When I was a boy growing up in Gaffney, my father would hand me a $1 bill, and he would say, "What's his character's name again?
Frank Underwood."
Frank Underwood. It's not Frank Underwood.
He would hand me a $1 bill. He said, "Frank, go down the store, buy a can of chewing tobacco, eat the whole thing, and tell me how it is."
That's what he did to Edward Meacham.
Yeah, that. You got that one.
That's
right.
That's the guy's name.
Yes. Yep.
Meacham, just make sure it all gets on my back. You hear?
You know, I'm going to lock this senator in this garage with this car running, and it's going to be an Audi.
That's been House of Cards talk.
Oh, man. Again, good
segment would have killed
good
5 years ago.
Good show, but that show became bad before we found out Kevin Spacey's human garbage trash.
Let me make this clear. There's no way my character will get killed off this show without having a satisfying conclusion to my arc. There's no outside circumstances whatsoever.
Yep, you gotta do the ring thing.
Gotta knock. All right.
Please order me a salad from Sweet Green. And a large pink drink from Starbucks. Really?
That was the closer to your bit?
God, let me tell you something. I want to hear about this Charlie from Dunkin' Donuts. They say it's caramel, but it's also mocha coffee. How do you do that? We had no such thing in Gaffney.
Now, am I to understand that a Shake Shack has just opened up in Washington, D.C.? They should know this is Five Guys City. I've met each one of the guys, and they're all right.
We're just going to keep doing this bit.
Yes.
Okay. It's like we're still doing this. Wonder Woman delayed to Christmas. Dune moved up a week. And Candyman delayed to next year, which I think good on all three.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's hard to know. I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, if Tenet can get released, you know, maybe they can stay on track for Wonder Woman for Christmas. But, you know, a lot of it's going to be what they think the market's going to look like at the current time. And I think it's better to keep rescheduling and putting it off than to hold it out there indefinitely. I think that that kind of sends you at least want to give people a release date to look forward to, even if you push it. That's what they always do with video games.
Right.
True. Yeah.
Right.
That is a go-to move. I mean, I'm assuming this is partially off the heels of the Tenet performance.
And, say it's not, and I don't totally believe that.
There's just no chance that's
it doesn't happen in a vacuum, right? Like it's
Exactly. I mean, there's extenuating circumstances to this cinema world that they're living in right now, and they want to make their money back. It's good for them, and it's better for us because then it's easier and at least safer for us to get to a movie theater. So win-win, I guess.
Exactly. All right. This episode brought to you in part by Upstart. That's right. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy. Getting out is hard, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully, now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high interest credit card debt. Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. As they said, they believe in you. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate. Since it's just a soft pull, it won't affect your credit score. The hard pull happens if you accept your rate. Over 400,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. See why Upstart is top ranked in their category with a 4.9 out of 5 rating on Trustpilot. Hurry to upstart.com/lights to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes. That's upstart.com/lights. Harry Styles in the Olivia Wilde movie. Replacing Shia LaBeouf, Don't Worry, Darling, is going to be alongside Florence Pugh. So that's good, cool casting. Mm-hmm.
Did they tell us why like Shia LaBeouf got replaced, or is that just like self-explanatory at this point?
I mean, I guess if you have the opportunity to have Harry Styles over Shiloh, you probably take that in a coming-of-age movie. Because Shiloh is like at this point, I know he's older than me, so I don't know. And Harry Styles is definitely like, what, 24? Maybe.
Younger? I don't know.
No, Harry Styles has to be older than that.
He's
by
like
now.
27 because he dated Taylor Swift.
Oh, he's 26. He's 26.
Okay, so he's a year younger than me.
He's still pretty young. Shy is in his 30s, right?
So, yeah.
I mean, I guess I get it.
And he looks older, too.
I guess I was just trying to get at like. No, it's like one of those things where, you know, Shia has a reputation of being kind of unpredictable sometimes. So I don't know if they just decided to recast him, but if it was a decision on personnel or if it was a decision on marketability of the movie, because certainly if you have Harry Styles in there, you have the whole fandom of the former One Directioner fandoms. Do you remember when I used to troll the One Direction fans with saying Harry's never, or it was Zayn's never coming back and One Direction's over?
Yes.
Yeah, so I just like put in the hashtag and be like, One Direction's done, and they get so mad at me. And I was right.
500 replies.
I was right. And you know what? They were probably 18 years old at the time, and I'm the loser in that scenario, but I'd like to think that I called my shot on that one.
No, they're eating crow right now.
Yeah, they couldn't recover without Zayn.
That's all I can think about. And Zayn went on to do Pillow Talk, and
yeah,
that's it.
Well, right? it stylized his recording name is Zayn, all uppercase. And mm-hmm. Then Pillow Talk was like all uppercase except for the I, which was really neat.
That was cool. A very sensual song.
I'm interested to see what Olivia Wilde does in this one. Right? Booksmart was great. She's got the chops. This is obviously a very cool cast. And, what do we know more about it? Like,
it's the only thing I think that they put out about it is that it's set in an isolated utopian community in the 1950s California desert. That's all we got right now. I'll tell you one thing for sure, and it is that when they dropped the first pictures of Styles and Pine wearing like the 50s outfits with like the nice greased back hair and the Wayfair sunglasses, like the internet's going to explode.
The high waist ones. Nuts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, high ass waist jeans. It's gonna be, or not jeans. It would be like slacks or something.
It'd be like trousers. And the wider legs are coming back too. It'd be like the wider leg trousers with the short hems and loafers, and white socks.
Yep. And they're gonna be for some reason like the tight at the ankle, the slacks. It's gonna be amazing, and the internet's gonna literally blow up. It's gonna be fun to watch. Just look out for that.
What if Harry Styles was a barber?
What would his name be?
Imagine his dad was a barber and is like getting mad when he realized he wanted to do music, like Zoolander's dad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you want to be a barber, huh? You don't want to be a barber?
That's how British people got their names. Like, that's how they designed their names. Like, Will Smith is because your family occupation was a Smith. So obviously he's supposed to be a barber.
Doug Stamper, his family made stamps.
No, he stamped on people's nuts. He's a dominatrix. Of a long family tradition.
Frank Underwood, he invented the tuck.
You ever heard of the scrope my goat? This is what we do here in Gaffney.
See, what you do is you take the waistband, you just slide it right in there. Oh, nobody.
I've never thrown
the twig.
I've never thrown the veto flag. I don't think we got to stop. We just can't keep doing the House of Cards bit on September 13th, 2020. Only because I'm afraid I'm going to bring it up again probably next week and then forget, and then we're going to be into it again for another.
Drew Carey Styles.
Fucking horny book writer just got introduced in the third season as I'm watching.
Oh, I hate that guy.
Yeah, it was.
I completely forgot about his character.
That's third season.
I love that dude.
Yeah.
Arthur, right?
He was the dad in a really good movie that I love suggesting that's never on streaming called Thoroughbreds.
Yeah. He was awesome in that. He was like the dickhead stepdad.
It's never on streaming. Ever on streaming. Anton Yelchin's last movie, I think.
It was. It released like 2 years after his death or something, too. And Anya Taylor-Joy, right? Mm-hmm. But he, that cool. guy, that actor, I don't remember his name, but he also is like this HBO series. Like, every single show needs to have him for 5 seconds. Like, if you've seen, what's it called, Boardwalk Empire, he's the guy Mickey something. He's so fucking funny. He's like the old timey guy. Where he's like, "Hey, what are you talking about, Nuck? I'm not sure what you're doing." He's very funny. I love that dude.
Yeah, he's just gonna. I hate that. I hate the character. All right, that's it. We got to talk about this Netflix movie.
Oh, brother.
Yeah, I understood it finally about 5 minutes beforehand, and now it makes almost too much sense. For now, I'm questioning the whole thing. I felt real dumb watching this movie. I'm thinking of Ending Things on Netflix, directed by Charlie Kaufman. Charlie Kaufman, I think most movie fans are aware, very famous name in movies. His early stuff, though, mostly just for writing, not directing, Being John Malkovich, adaptation, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, the thing that stick out most, Synecdoche in New York, Animalisa, which I got to add to the ratings website.
Very good.
Yeah. And then now he has this one. I'm thinking of Ending Things, which is a Netflix movie starring Jesse Plemons, Jesse Buckley, the two main leads, Toni Collette in this, as well as
David Thewlis,
who I would imagine most people will recognize from Harry Potter.
Great voice. Fargo on FX.
Yeah.
It's very good.
And Big Mouth is the Shame Wizard.
Shame Wizard, yeah.
But yeah, obviously I'd imagine most know him as Remus Lupin, or as the villain in Wonder Woman.
Unfortunately, yes. He was, what was he? He's Ares or something.
That was the moment where you're like, oh, Lupin's the bad guy. Okay. This is a fucking, so I'll say this off the start. Spoiler alert here, by the way. If you don't want this movie spoiled, I would stop here. I think the first thing that initially, I don't want to say broke my brain. The first thing that just kind of had me lost was that I assumed wrongfully, because psychological mind melting is kind of what he does. Like, Being John Malkovich is a great example. I mean, that's it's a wacky movie, amazing movie. But minds and psychology, all that stuff, that's Charlie Kaufman. But I really thought there was a positive, uplifting side to this somewhere that maybe I missed. And I think my understanding of this in the end has just come to the fact that I've accepted there isn't. It's a really down, depressing, weak, sad movie. there really isn't a positive thing that I found, I'm not saying that that's bad. I'm not going to pretend I love this movie. And I've had a couple people make a really good comp on Twitter that I couldn't think of what I was like trying to connect this to in terms of like connecting things. And I don't think it's as convoluted and absurd as it. Mother, people keep, they're like, this movie reminds me of Mother, sort of, with Jennifer Lawrence. Now, not the same really at all. That movie is different, but like, I kind of get what they're getting at here. And I don't dislike this movie like I dislike Mother, but I don't think I love this movie.
I don't think it
really worked for me. And I'm not just saying that because it was super depressing instead. I'm just saying it really, I didn't find one positive thing. And I think initially when it ended, I'm like, I feel like I missed the positive thing to take from here.
I think the only positive thing that I can think of is this movie is that the Jake character was a semi-decent person or a good person. Like, I mean, he took care of his parents, right? You know, his world, his dreams existed in his mind. His thoughts replaced actions in terms of going and you know, talking to people and, you know, just didn't have a happy life really. But, he took care of his parents. That was the only good thing. It's like, he's not a complete piece of shit person because you could have made him a piece of shit person. I don't think that's what they're going for. But in terms of just the whole narrative of the story, there's no good. The character's fine.
Mm-hmm. I think this movie was extremely confusing and very, very dry. It's like one of the most Charlie Kaufman things I think I've ever witnessed on screen. And I feel bad because maybe my girlfriend watched this with me thinking, oh, okay. I mean, people keep telling us to watch it. Why not? I'll see if it's fun. And I don't think anyone's ever been more bored by something my entire life than her trying to watch those fucking car sequences, which like I'm watching and I'm like, damn, the framing on this is kind of cool. Okay, that sequence is kind of sick. And like, but man, it is slow. It is like not entirely thought provoking entirely the time. I don't think it's as clever as it thinks it is, but it's not a bad movie. Like I'm watching it and a lot of the filming techniques that it uses in it are like kind of impressive. And it's the one scene I think that stands out more than anything else is just the entire sequence that takes place in the house with the parents. That is, I think, is alone makes the movie semi worth watching, just because I think the way he's able to build tension throughout that and the performances from Toni Collette and David Thewlis are like off the fucking charts. It's so fucking freaky. And so I think it deeply grabs on like the viewer's psyche, like the entire time. I'm like, what the fuck is in the basement? Okay, wait, why are they old now? Wait, why is this person young? Like, I want to know what's going on. And the fact that he's like, the movie's able to elicit that sort of emotional response for me, like that's, it, to me, a success, right? Because the whole point of almost any movie is like, you want to elicit a response from anyone watching your movie. And I was getting anxiety trying to watch it. I was wanting to know what's going on, and I was not horrified, but freaked out. And I don't think it was satisfying at all, the movie, but I don't think that was necessarily the point. So my overall score in it ended up on being a 70.
Yeah, I mean, it's based off a book too, which I haven't read because I don't read too many books. And I went back and read some of the reviews, and like even amongst the professional critics, I don't think there was a consensus on it. Like I remember reading, you know, one positive review, and then I think the New York Times review kind of felt, I think they called it gimmicky or something. Because I was trying to do that because I was trying to get a sense of if the book was divisive, then it makes sense that the movie's divisive because the story in and of itself, I don't see how you put that onto screen and not have it translate, because that's the thing you either have a huge problem with or you don't with this one. Like, I think if you can get past the fact that, I feel like a lot of people are going to watch this and maybe not figure it out. I think there are probably a lot of people that will know what's going on as they watch it and figure it out. But I didn't know when I watched it. Right. And then I went back and I read a summary and read like an explainer, and everything kind of made sense. And I think I liked it more after I read that summary, honestly. But then I got into this whole like, you know, thought thing is of like, is it a good movie for me if I have to have like a supplementary strategy guide to the movie holding my hand through it? Or is that on me as a viewer for not being smart enough to figure it out?
I don't have an answer. That's a really good question, but that's a good question that I brought up a couple times, one with Tenet. And one with, I think, a better example would be Tenet is less confusing in a symbolic sense. Like, I would say The Lighthouse would be the better comp, right? In terms of movies that like I was confused on first watch. And then I did watch it twice again And like, I don't know. I think what you just said is a good question because I read the same thing you did. And I'll actually read it. I'll read the two paragraphs. Should I read it?
Yeah. Well, let me,
go through what you're saying. Yeah.
And the thing is so I enjoyed it. I'm going to give it a 75. I think that I didn't find it pretentious or full of itself or anything like that. I struggled because like, it's something that I feel like I'd appreciate more on rewatching it, but I never want to rewatch this movie because it made me feel so sad. And I think that's a credit to it. I think it made me feel very strong emotions, even though I didn't really love like what was happening until I read about it. I still felt despair. Like that came through to me. That's what resonated to me. And so at least it challenged me from a sense. It got me to think a little bit more about the relationship of a movie and just having a very average IQ. And, you know, we talk about comic book movies a lot, so we don't watch too many of these movies that challenge us. And I think it's good to get out there, but like, you know, I think it's very subjective as to like, you know, one is like, obviously a movie doesn't have to hold your hand throughout it.
Yeah.
But if something's confusing to the point where you just can't actively enjoy it because you don't know what's going on, I don't know who that's on, but I'm willing to say that's on me. I'll take responsibility for that because other than that, like I enjoyed it. I did like the long card. I like the long card drives. I thought they were like, you know, the literary references and the references to like Oklahoma and stuff like that. Like after, you know, let's just read the description. We can talk about it. I give it a 75.
I saw a really good short review of it explaining like how it felt like just a bunch of ideas being thrown. Or is that a fucking tweet that got sent to us? That might have been a reply to my tweet. I got to find that because I think that someone did a really good job at summarizing how I felt. I got to figure out what it was. But here, I'll go through it here. This is from thisisbarry.com. This is the simplified way. The entire film is the fantasization of a lonely old janitor who imagines alternate versions of his life, which involve being radically intellectual and in relationship with a lovely woman. Thanks to overly protective parents, Jake grew up cocooned and alone, facing a rough life in school, sometimes bullied and other times neglected. Jake spent much of his time with books, movies, poetry, and musicals. His parents always told him that he was brilliant and a terrific artist, and Jake made a connect with his life and the film A Beautiful Mind. Sadly, in reality, Jake was mediocre at art, was no science whiz, and landed a job as a janitor at his own school. Alone and neglected, Jake grew old, but was a good son to his parents. Lucy is one of many women Jake wanted to be with, but he was never noticed by women, and he never mustered the courage to talk to anyone. Over the years, Jake has constructed elaborate artificial events in his mind, including taking his girlfriend to meet his parents. The drive to his parents' place is through a cold and melancholy path reflective of his state of mind and loneliness. The discussions during the ride are all contents of the books and movies he spent his life with. The dinner at their home also sees his parents at multiple points in time of their lives because Jake is trying to pinpoint that exact time, which would be great to introduce his girlfriend to them. And this is where it gets very morbid. No moments feels right. In the end, we see Jake bidding farewell to his fantasy of being with the woman he loves, and Sally dies cold, lonely in his truck while imagining being acknowledged for his existence. Jesus Christ. But like,
weak.
It explained like that is very simple, but it just didn't come across that way to me. And I'm not sure I would have, like, I kind of got what it was. Like, I got who it was and all that, but like, I didn't, like, the intricacies of that didn't work for me. And I hate dinging a movie because maybe I'm not smart enough, but there is an extent where someone can go too far, which I completely see the irony for those who hated Tenet and are listening right now. Trust me, I absolutely see that. So
should not have been a Netflix movie, in my opinion. This is like, when I think Netflix movies, in no way do I imagine a movie like this, because the Netflix movies are supposed to be.
You think of Hubie Halloween.
You think Hubie Halloween, you think fucking Dumb Loud entertaining, or at the very least, like, they do have very good movies, you know, stuff like Roma that are art pieces, but at least stuff that's more easy to figure out. And again, part of that has to do with us not exactly being tremendously high IQ individuals, but at the same time, like, this is a very difficult to decipher movie. It's very bleak, which I think is good. It lends the movie well. And again, like me and Tro are both saying, like, it elicits a response from you emotionally, which is a success, but it's just, it's not. I think it thinks it's smarter than it actually is.
I think that it's very pretentious across the movie, but again, that's also part to do, I guess, now that you're explaining it, with the guy kind of seeing everything through the lens of like the books and plays and everything he's read. But the entire thing does to me, it seems like a book that was designed to be strictly read by people that love The New Yorker, because all the references and all this shit like that, I'm like, I don't get it. I don't care. And I want to fast forward through this. And, but there's so much shit. There's shit to love in this. Like the entire house sequence, I loved. It was awesome. But the drive sequences, I disagree with you, Trill. I hated them.
Yeah. That's why I think like, I don't mind something like this beyond Netflix, because when you compare it to all the blue tent action movies that are being released on the platform, like I don't think it's a bad thing to have something like this.
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
That has a narrow audience. Like you're never going to see this on the top 10 of like what's trending on Netflix next to Dark or, you know, fucking British Cake Show or, you know, whatever else is on there. But, you know, there will be people who like it. And, you know, in the same vein that, you never know like exactly what sparks, you know, anyone's imagination. Like I certainly think this is one of those works that, you know, people who are like really interested in going to film school and filmmaking and telling a story, like I think this did a pretty good job of storytelling. Now I couldn't figure it out. I think the story was too convoluted, but like when I went back and read about it, it actually made more sense. And I retroactively enjoyed the scenes a lot more once I figured out the importance of them, or like once I figured out that the speech at the end where he wins the Nobel Prize was partially lifted off of A Beautiful Mind, which was, I think, one of the VHS tapes or DVDs in his room. And I certainly think that the, you know, overall like theme of him, like basically fabricating life experiences that he, you know, either feels like he got robbed of or deprived himself on, and supplementing them with his own like relations to like pop culture, and like art media and everything he entertained that entertained him, and giving himself like illusions of being like exceptional at something. I think that's very relatable. I think that's like, you know, when people like, you know, interface with a lot of media around like comic books and stuff like that, I think a lot of that's like a superhero fantasy. And I think a lot of that is like, you know, just like getting lost in imagination and wondering what it would be like to be a superhero. And I think especially like in this like weird culture of isolation we've created, that, you know, I think has been driven by the internet. I think there are a lot more people that like are dangerously tied to the media they consume and the pop culture they consume. And that, you know, unfortunately becomes a big part of their identity, to the point where it obscures their ability to have a real like productive life. I don't know. And that's just me overanalyzing it as normal, but I will agree with you in the sense that like, I don't know. I don't know where to leave it. I really don't. I mean, I think it was fine. I never want to watch it again because it made me feel sad. Yes. I don't know what that says about the movie as a whole, but I certainly think it's okay to say this wasn't my cup of tea, but it has its own merits. And the funny thing is like Charlie Kaufman, you know, I've read a lot of jokes about like NYU film school and all that shit. Like he went to NYU film school, and this feels like a very, like out of all those jokes, this would be feel like a very NYU-y film school type movie. So I think it has its place. I think that high art portion of the movies has its own place. I think there are probably podcasts that can dissect it and discuss it better and bring some levity to it that we cannot. But I certainly think there's no harm in having this up on Netflix, at least giving someone the option to access it versus another movie with, you know, Chris Hemsworth fucking, you know, polishing a gun.
I think the issue again is that I think people that love this movie don't like Netflix out of principle. That is, I think, more my thought process on that. I know it reminds me of this movie. It reminds me of fucking Ethan Frome. That's what this reminds me of. That miserable, frustrating book, and also crappy Liam Neeson.
I never read that book, bro. I wasn't in AP. You gotta.
No, that's not an AP book, brother. That's like Ethan middle Frome? School garbage book. It is horrible.
Oh, shit, I never read Ethan Frome.
It is miserable, depressing, and like when you're a kid, I think it's very hard to understand them. But in this, I'm like, I understand they're trying to elicit that feeling that no other movies really want to go for, because again, it's not enjoyable. I think most filmmakers want to make their audience goers feel happy, and I think it's brave to try and do the opposite. At the same time, I'm not going to go be like fucking, damn, I got to go rewatch motherfucking I'm Thinking of Leaving. This shit ruled.
And absolutely. It's an intimidating movie when you're watching it too. And I don't think that's a bad thing, but the house scene, when you start getting to the house and then, you know, the Toni Collette and Theula's characters start switching around and you feel something's up. Like, you knew something was fucked up to begin with. Wasn't quite like right or based in reality. That's where it really started hitting its stride. But before that, you're kind of like, why the fuck are these people together? Like, you said, we had great chemistry and all this stuff or like whatever. And then you start realizing that, okay, well, this makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a weird one. This is where that line of like the favorite versus best kind of seeps in, where you're like, I didn't love it, but I respect the art form and kind of like hiding things and making things a bit more mysterious in terms of the way they play out and how you interpret and connect with them, even though they seem barely, when they're written out, they're very obvious, like what he was trying to do here. I don't like it nearly as much as his other movies.
Oh yeah. I think way more comprehensible in all his other movies.
Yeah. I don't know. Like I think there's an audience that would obviously disagree with me. And I know there is, we have some people who rated this high in the 90s, but I didn't connect with it in a way where me getting it makes me go, God, that was fucking brilliant. Or that was deep. Like, I got that kind of like with The Lighthouse. Like, there was that aha. Now, I don't know if I think I'll ever watch this movie again on like The Lighthouse. But I mean, I'm going to go higher. Like, I didn't despise it in terms of like quality of movie. I think it's a very solid movie in terms of like how it was made, written. I prefer his movies, you know, where he isn't director. I think those are the better movies of the ones he's made.
Well, I think there's something to be said about his other projects, you know, whether he wrote them or directed them. They were more enjoyable, and therefore I kind of liked them more because of that. Now, like, I feel like, you know, if we're to make like an analogy, like a really sloppy one, this movie's like a really healthy green that you just would never eat on its own. Like, and some people like it, right? Some people want the nutrition, and I think that's good. And obviously, like, you know, Star Wars would be like a Big Mac, but like the other Charlie Kaufman movies would be like a nice smoothie that he puts the green ingredient in, but blends it together with some lemon juice and some bananas to make it palatable or whatever. I think there's like nutritional value to it, but there's still some level of fun and enjoyment, whereas this movie had zero fun and zero enjoyment.
And it's a close analogy.
I was trying to make a House of Cards joke.
I'm gonna throw, I gotta think about it more, but for preliminary, I'm gonna throw an 82 on it. I think it's good. And going back on it, I'm like, fuck, like maybe like I'm not gonna penalize the movie for me being a dummy. I'm just dumb.
I don't know. I mean, it. What was the only thing, even after reading the synopsis, that I don't understand was the movie within the movie, and I didn't know the fake
movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, well, yeah. Especially
I'm a sucker for fake movies and movies. I don't know why I always fucking love that.
But I don't know what was the symbolic significance. Was it just showing him consuming media and therefore like showing him in the act of like him trying to conjure up more, you know, more behaviors for his, like, I forget her name. Well, she had multiple names during the movie. It was kind of,
they kept changing it.
Part of this.
Oh, like Lucy.
Yeah.
Yeah. They called her many of things.
And she did a fantastic job, by the way.
Well, Jesse,
they're all awesome.
I thought they were. I mean, that was. I will say, want to say positive about it, because again, I don't think it's a bad movie at all. I think some of the acting. I'd say David Dulles was the best part in the movie, though. Everyone hyped up Jesse Plemons.
Fargo, dude. Yeah. This performance in Fargo, but it's on fucking
I thought he was fucking great, and I will say, I did like the ending, despite how fucked up it was. Like it was fucked and incredibly depressing and bleak, but. I do like that. I like the intertwining of the interweaving of different stories, but some of the art, the art in which it was presented was just, maybe went over my head. I don't know. Like, cause there are people who like, the initial reaction to this movie, when people are telling us to review this, like, very high scores. Our audience scoring this thing is a 91. That's easily the lowest that we've ever been behind our audience on anything. Ever that we've done this show. So maybe that's the takeaway. We're just big dumb idiots.
Well,
by the way, the fucking trailer for Aaron Sorkin's new movie just dropped, but we'll talk about it on Thursday.
Well,
also going to Netflix.
Maybe the score is not reflective of, I keep coming back to it. It's like, you know, it makes you think, but it makes you think in the meta, which I guess most good things do, right? So I think there's a value about like just considering, you know, like one, the movie, you know, has kind of a message in terms of like, you know, your relationship to art, and what that means to you and how that kind of forms your perspective on things. And this one's taken to an extreme. But the other thing is kind of like your relationship to this piece of art and how much supplemental your information you need kind of going in to understand it. And like I said, that's on me. I will fully admit to just not really knowing what the hell was going on when I was watching it.
Yeah, again, I think, and we'll wrap on this one, but I think my thing that initially got me was like, I felt like I was missing a very positive thing on it. And the more I look and read, it's like, okay, it wasn't. Like, I felt like there might have been something there, like I wasn't getting, like some message, positivity, because I just don't think there was. You're right, like he was a likable person. It's a good son. That's about it. And talk about the basement stuff. The basement clearly symbolism for negativity in his life. What did this thing say the basement was?
Well, the basement was where his janitor uniforms were.
It's a fear of reality.
Yeah.
The other thing that noted the dance sequence in the hallway of the school.
Oh, the play, yeah.
Very much La La Land vibes when it's like how life would have played out or could have played out and like what would have happened. In a much different way, but like just the point in the movie which it comes, and it kind of reminded me of that when they have that moment. And La La Land. Again, though, much different how it plays out. All right. So, yeah, 91 for the audience. What are we reviewing on Thursday? Is there anything new out between now and then? When does the Devil All the Time come out? That's Thursday, right? I
think that comes out between – yeah. Yeah, I don't think that's out yet.
I think we just missed. So either you guys can do it on Sunday or we can save that one.
Yeah, we'll save it. We'll find something to do.
We're gonna review Thundercats.
Oh, snarf. Snarf, snarf, snarf.
We'll try to get a screener for New Mutants for Thursday. This is kind of it. Like, we have to review it at some point, but we're missing the window. The window is slowly closing.
Boom, boom. Bet. Do, do. Bet.
Free slots, gambling.
A real screener, not a bootleg.
I know.
Can't joke about that. Got but then the Devil All the Time, Antebellum, we'll watch. That's coming to streaming. Janelle Monáe, Eric Lang, Jenna Maloney, Enola Holmes, Greenland with Gerard Butler, which I already have a screener for.
Sequel to Australia.
Yep, that's right. You're absolutely right, Boom.
And then October 7th, Hubie Halloween.
I mean, I'm kind of excited for Hubie Halloween.
Oh, because we've never done an Adam Sandler ranking, so we'll do an Adam Sandler ranking for the first time.
Yeah, let's talk about some toys.
Yeah. All right, let's do a list. Here it is. Ken Jack tweeted about Hit Clips. Hit Clips was a small device that you would wear on your hip. The keychain. It's a keychain, and you would put these little cartridges in, and it would play a portion of a song. Bands included NSYNC, Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, Backstreet Boys. They were all on there. McKenjack said you never had them. They were lame as shit, but also at the same time very cool. So we're gonna do a list. We're gonna rank things that we always wanted but we never got. Trill, I'll let you go first, then Kenjack, then myself, then the audience. Not a draft, but just for that sake. Trill, number all 5. Right.
The number 5 thing I always wanted was I'm glad I never got it, but it was a Virtual Boy. Remember the Virtual Boy? It was
a
Nintendo thing that came out in between the SNES and the N64 that they tried to make a thing, and it stood up on the desk on a tripod stand. Put your eyes in it. It was quote unquote in 3D, but it was like red and it was red. It was like red Vector. It sucked, but it was a cool looking machine. And I saw it and I'm like, oh, that's neat. I want the new Nintendo. Nintendo's always made good products. This one can't be bad. And I'm glad it didn't, because I would have played that thing for one day, never played it again.
Angry Video Game Nerds has a very good,
so funny
Virtual Boy.
Rolf, James Rolf.
I wonder how Angry Video Game Nerd's doing. I wonder if he's like, because I very much enjoyed him 10 years ago, but I wonder if he's like had to transition his shtick into
the
more present day.
The newer, yeah, him doing the old thing now doesn't really work for me all that much.
Or just saying, like, this game's a flaming pile of buffalo dump diarrhea.
Shit, diarrhea, douche nozzle.
Like, 2010, you're like, damn, dude. The way he strung that cuss word together was epic win.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go back and watch some of the, like, every now and then I'll be like, what do I want to, because, like, I'm a big, I'll watch, like, one or two YouTube videos while I eat dinner and lunch. I'm like, what do I want today? Oh, you know what? Let's go Angry Video Game Nerd. I still enjoy it.
Bible games, baby.
All right, Virtual Boy. Mine, oh, no, Ken Jack, you're next.
For my number five, I'm going to pick, and this was a little bit past my time in a sense, it was the Nerf Long Shot, which is essentially... It's a Nerf gun. It looks like a giant sniper rifle, but you can like detach it into different guns. It has a big ass scope on the back, bullpup action, look cool as hell. And I wanted it forever. And it came out in 2006. I looked this up because I was like, damn, this gun looks kind of newer, but I remember wanting it really bad. So it came out when I was 13 and I wanted it because I was right at the tail end of the stage where I'm like, damn, Nerf's kind of sick. This shit's fun. I play with my brothers all the time. And I didn't end up getting it, but my younger brother did end up getting it and he didn't let me use it. Just fucked up.
Yeah, that is fucked. Nothing worse than you wanting something, you don't get it, and like the friend or someone gets it.
Yeah, sucks.
That's tough. Nerf gun is on the audience's list somewhere. We'll get to that in a second. Mine. This thing called Better Blocks. They were like knockoff Legos, but they glowed in the dark.
They're better though.
Yeah. You could . Yeah, the kids in the commercial were they were like mildly cool, but they glowed in the dark, and like they would build hats and like fake sunglasses or like eyeglasses out of them, and like Legos were for sure better, like not even a question. But these were, they said they were better, so you just assume they were good. Most of my products are all made or are all as seen on TV things, because if it's on TV, it's automatically cool. So Better Blocks, never got them. Probably a good thing. They were probably shit Legos. Audience picked a Nerf Gatling gun. They had multiple versions of Nerf guns. Though, having used a Nerf Gatling gun in our office...
Yeah, I want it.
They're cool, but like, I kind of prefer the regular Nerf gun.
The ones the thrill that we got, the Star Wars blaster one that went really fast, I like that one better than the Gatling gun. It's just soft.
Yeah, it's cool though. It's an exhilarating feeling holding a Nerf Gatling gun. You would have ruined the fun for many people had you had that as a kid back in the day.
Yeah, it would have sucked.
Trill, number four. Top five gadgets, toys, things you always wanted.
Number four for me, I'm gonna send a picture to you. When I look at this thing, I feel like Patrick Bateman looking at somebody else's business card. It's from the mid 90s. It's a GT Interceptor BMX bike. This was the Rolls Royce of the BMX bikes, and you had to put the front and back pegs on them, even though you couldn't grind because you got to have your buddies, they jump on to ride on it. But I just remember they had these like translucent handle covers, like just the logo was so cool. It had the wings coming out of the GT. Like even looking at it now, it's doing something like you know, when you get that funny feeling like in your stomach when you're in like a really nice house or something that you're like, this is awesome. It's excitement. That's what I feel right now. Looking at this GT Interceptor. Oh, look at that thing.
It does look sick as hell.
But I can't find a picture of the red one. The red one was just. Oh.
I think I remember seeing this on maybe it wasn't I Love the 80s, but I Love the 90s maybe.
Here, I'm going to send you guys the red one. The red one's the one I wanted. Look at this.
Yeah, it's very cool.
I like the black one better.
The GT. Also, just the word interceptor is very cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we got a special guest on. You say hi, Daddy. Say hi, Daddy.
it's been a year and you can't talk on the podcast anymore. You say night night, Daddy. Can you do Nuckies?
Like trolls.
That's a microphone. Hi. Can you say night night, Daddy? That's a microphone. That's a microphone. Give me a hug. Give me a hug.
Say bye, podcast.
Bye, podcast. Bye bye.
Bye, guys.
Okay, now you talk. It's really now she entertaining.
Talks. Oh, she's like, don't patronize me. I know how to say goodnight to Dad.
Lilo and Stitch? Yeah, that's Stitch on his couch. Why you say they say night night? Night night. Bye.
She wants to know about podcasting. She's not interested in the good night repeat. Yeah.
She's getting her own podcast. It's on Wondery.
Wait, what's the way, called? Sorry?
It's on Wondery. They picked her up. Okay. Yeah. They're giving Pete Buttigieg and her a podcast deal.
Speaking of exclusive podcast deals, Joe Rogan's new set is horrible.
Oh, it's horrendous.
Yeah, what the hell was that?
It is such a whiff. A massive whiff.
There has to be a reason for it.
I can see him thinking it's cool.
Acoustics? I don't know.
Maybe. All right. GT Interceptor is just a cool name for a bike, too. You feel like you're going to beat out everyone in whatever type of...
You beat off everyone in your town.
You're going to beat off all your townsmates.
The translucent handles on that red one I sent. It's just, so nice.
The plastic cylinder wrap over the BMX bike is like a classic. That's a mainstay of any kid's bike. That weird, like, I don't know what type of plastic it was, but it's plastic over foam over the bar.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so you didn't bonk your head on it or whatever.
Exactly.
Mine, this commercial shamed parents and kids. I never got it. Parents never allowed me to get it. That's Nickelodeon Magazine. It was a big deal. Those commercials were probably the most iconic commercials as a kid. Nickelodeon Magazine, please. Kids just throwing hints in their parents' like magazines. They'd put them like Nickelodeon Magazine would pop out of like their book or like the newspaper. They'd mow it into the grass. If you didn't have Nickelodeon Magazine, you felt like a loser. Because Nickelodeon, you're watching the show. You're watching whatever, Rugrats. And then the show would be like, if you don't have this magazine, you're a fucking loser.
Yeah, you think you know everything about the Rugrats?
Yeah, bitch. You don't. And I had Nintendo Power, which is a very cool magazine.
No, Nintendo Power is for babies, you dumbass. Little baby magazine.
All right, whatever you say.
Have the little number you can call on Nintendo. Oh, I'm stuck on Zelda. I'm just kidding. Nintendo Power is fine.
Whatever. You probably still have your fucking collection in the closet.
Yeah, I got my EGM 100, baby.
Nickelodeon Magazine. Never got it. Cool shit in there. I'll never know the behind the scenes info on.
Disney Magazine was the same way, except Rock Disney was the size of a TV guide. Disney Adventures, I think.
Yes. I had highlights.
I never had a magazine subscription as a child. And I'm happy I didn't.
Dude, there's nothing better than getting a fresh mag in the mail.
Yeah, fresh mag. Sports Illustrated for kids. Why is there no mock draft in here?
Ripping open a fresh EGM with a Tomb Raider 1 demo disc in it.
Oh, yeah. I got a demo disc in a magazine once that was broken in half. That was very
unfortunate. Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah. You know what I do miss? Like the old SIs where they'd have the cologne samples in it. Just that page. Just, yeah.
I do miss that.
Ken Jack, number four.
My number four. All right. I'm going to think about it. Okay, I'm going to pick Flom. Only because it looks so good, and I wanted to eat it as a kid. Every time I would see it on a commercial, I'm like, Flom looks like very edible. And it wasn't, obviously, but it looks so much fun to play with. And the way they advertised it on the show or on the commercial, whatever, it didn't look like it would make any mess. And it clearly had to make huge messes for anyone who bought that. Like, it had to. And it was basically just like worse Play-Doh.
Wait, Flom?
Flom, yeah.
Oh, okay. I misheard you. That's my number three, Flom. I wanted Flom. Flom would be. Flom was right on in between Nickelodeon Magazine and Better Blocks.
Was it GAC? Right. Was it like related to GAC?
No, because GAC would leave a mess. No. GAC could get stuck. Like if you put GAC on like a TV remote by accident, there was going to be GAC on that remote.
Oh, yeah. But also, if you drop GAC on the floor, there's going to be a pube in your GAC.
That's true.
100%.
Well, no, because so Flom, I ended up like getting Flom one day, like later in life, because I was like, oh, I have money now, like I'm gonna waste it on Flom. Oh, Flom was real; it was just shitty.
Mm-hmm. So I'm saying,
kinetic sand much cooler.
Yeah, I want to get the moon sand too. That just missed my list. Like that just looked really cool on the commercials. The kids were like, yeah, look, I'm playing with moon sand. Isn't that sick? And I was like, yeah, like that looks awesome.
Flom was very
like an asshole.
You could do so much with Flom, but then I finally tried Flom and it was smoke and mirrors, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Not as bad. This is not on my list because I got it. I tweeted about this today, was Marvin's Magic Drawing Board. That was the biggest fucking scam and made for TV things. That thing, I've never met anyone who bought that and had it work.
Flom's got the beads in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
That all right. Art. That's my number three for the next one. Audience Sock'em Boppers.
I'm one of those two. Damn. Me and my brothers all petitioned big time to get it. And my mom and dad were just like, yeah, you're going to murder each other.
Probably the right move on there. That was just.
You'll die.
Yeah. Those would have been brutal.
Yeah.
Trill, number three for you. My number three is already Flom.
Since it's like not really a toy, but kind of.
You could say gadgets and things.
It's something I really wanted when I was like 12, and that was a pair of Oakleys.
Oh,
intriguing.
But it was the eye jacket, silver eye jackets, just like Michael Jordan wore.
Oh, okay.
At some point, because I lived in the suburbs of Chicago, and I wanted the silver eye jacket Oakleys, and my parents always like, you know, my parents were pretty good about like indulging me sometimes, and so I respect them for that, but there are certain things that they just thought were ridiculous, that they died on the hill saying,
you look like fucking Riddick.
Yeah, they're just saying like, or $85 or however much they wore for a pair of sunglasses is absurd, which I agree with. Mm-hmm. But they were cool eye jackets. It's the silver. Oh, I still remember silver black lettering. Oh, so sweet.
My Oakleys that I got when I was like playing Little League and stuff, I got orange ones, I remember.
And wore glasses when I was playing Little League.
Definitely didn't age well. I mean, I wore them just for show.
I was wanting the flip shades, too.
Yeah, those were cool. My favorite player growing up was Travis Fryman of the Indians, third baseman.
Oh, yeah.
And he had the flip shades. But then also David Duvall had the big sunglasses, and he was cool at the time for kids who like golf.
Mom, I want a pair of size 36 waist jeans like Michael Jordan, please, even though I'm 8 years old.
What's your number three, Ken Jack?
My number three is, and I'm going to send a picture of it in the group in case you guys don't know it offhand. It's the Robo Sapien.
Oh, yeah. And
the Robo Sapien looked
That's
so
like
cool.
The Sharper Image cover boy.
Exactly, yeah. And I was like, look, Mom, basically what I can do is have the Robo Sapien do all my chores for me. Look, there's a control. I can have it. It's going to be so sick. And my mom would like to look me dead in the face and was like, you're never fucking getting that a day in your life. That looks like a piece of shit. And it turned out it was. Because a couple years later, my best friend got one, and I tried to play with it, and I'm like, this is terrible. Very fortunate my mom didn't buy it.
I am Robo Sapien.
Robo Chomo, here to the rescue. Robo Sapien, what a great name.
Do all my chores. You lost immediately and you said that.
The thing is like 8 inches tall. It's not going to do anything. Can't do shit. It's a garbage robot.
What if you just took out the package? It's like, please show me to your mom's drawers. What? I need to do a visual scan of the entire house, starting with the drawers that your mom keeps her personal garments in.
They replaced the microchip accidentally. Like small soldiers.
Audience number three is blow pens. Also confirmed, not a good product.
Yeah.
Blow pens were just, I mean, what was wrong with markers? Nothing. That's the answer.
Let's go to the old-fashioned marker, kid.
Markers were great. The you know, the really smelly markers, too, with, like, they had the fruits on them?
Oh, yeah.
Those were great. Bullpens, those stunk.
Remember just clicking the markers together on the caps? And just making the big marker stick?
Yeah, Marker sword. Trill, number two.
Number two is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Technodrome toy.
Technodrome?
Yeah, Technodrome. So the
Technodome. Please show me to your mom for some Technodome.
So it was the big like globular
Oh shit!
Thing that sick. Krang rolled around in, and like I think they're below the Earth. I think that's where they're supposed to be. Shredder would visit sometimes to get his marching orders, and this was like, you know, it was one of those bigger play sets, right? And then it opened up, and you could, you know, have different floors and stuff like that. That was always pretty neat.
Yeah, there was like a Micro Machines Death Star like this I probably should have on the list that I want.
I was going to say, it's like the Death Star thing, except it's just TMNT.
This thing is fucking cool.
Yeah, it's neat. Love that.
My parents always drew the line somewhere. Like, I got a bunch of action figures, but then something like this would be like, the USS flag is a good example. Like,
well, that was the other basis for this list. I thought it might be on your list.
No, because I wasn't a big G.I. Joe person. I never wanted that, but like, that was like an absurdly priced toy at the time. Mm-hmm. So all the action figures had, you know, essentially these, like the action figures were the gateway, right? And then they were trying to hook the big fish character, the big fish customers with the big like plastic $300 sets. They drew the line there, which was smart.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the USS flag is just one of the greatest things of all time.
It's so sick. If you don't like it, you are just un-American. I'm sorry.
Before my time, obviously, but
if I was like Casey Neistat, I would buy that.
Mm-hmm. Fresh out the box.
Gary V. Like I would just go to garage sale looking for the USS flag. Like that would be my objective in life.
I watched like six Casey Neistat airplane first class review episodes this morning while I was eating breakfast. It popped up in there. You know, actually, so I upload the dozen to the Barstool YouTube page. And whoever control, like a lot of people are on the Barstool YouTube page because they have to upload their own videos. And someone watches a copious amount of disc golf, professional disc golf. And I fell down the rabbit hole on that. Those guys are fucking really good at that. And mm-hmm. it's actually not a bad watch. It's a kind of a fun, casual 15-minute sports watch. And I'm fascinated how good they are at Frisbee disc golf. Not just Frisbee. My number two is the Amazing Elastic Plastic. Do you remember that? It was like it was like this little tiny straw, and it was like this goop, and it made these balloons, and the balloons like couldn't pop. Like you could put the commercial, you could put like a fork through it. That was always the commercial. And actually, I'm sending you guys a picture. You could put a fork through the balloon, and it was like a big bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And it like came in it was a small straw. It came in like a toothpaste tube, and then you blow these big things, and then that's it. And they were like really sticky and gross too. And that's another thing that I eventually did later in life. Like I did it later so I can count as I never had as a kid. Terrible product.
Mm-hmm.
Just terrible.
Infomercial products, I feel like large and mass are not good. Like they were not, I don't think I've ever seen an infomercial product that's paid off.
Most are terrible. Yeah. Kenjack number two.
My number two is Tech Decks. Tech Decks, just tiny skateboards for your fingers, for those of you unfamiliar with the product. The weirdest, weirdly popular inventions of my time growing up. I'm very happy I never ended up getting them because they're just so stupid in retrospect. It's just, you do it on your fingers. You do skateboard tricks on your fingers.
Some people are so good at them.
Yeah.
I know people were good at them, but nobody you know was ever that good at it. You know, like one kid in your grade could do a kickflip. Fucking awesome, dude. Some guy on Proto YouTube or E-Bombs World is doing like fucking 180 kickstands and bullshit like that. We can't do that. No one can do them.
Okay. I'll see you calling that pointless and raise you the Tech Deck scooter. Did you ever see those?
Oh God, no.
Yeah, they had Razor scooter Tech Decks.
I just remember I forget what store we were at. I was there, it was me and my brothers and my dad, and I was like, I pointed out like a set of Tech Decks, and I was just like, yo, Dad, can I get, I didn't say yo, Dad. I don't know why I said it like that. I was like, Dad, can I please get these Tech Decks? Look, they got little bearings in them, a little tiny wrench. I can flip out the boards, like flip out the bearings and switch them out and shit. And he just looked me like dead in the face and was like, absolutely fucking not. You are never going to get these. You'll lose all of it. It's stupid. This is the dumbest toy you've ever asked me to buy. And I was like, I was very much, I would say, disheartened by that. I don't think I ever asked him to buy me a toy again. So I was like,
people are really good at those. And it always made me angry because I owned a lot of them. Like I always bought into these fucking fads, and this is like these Mighty Beans.
Oh, Mighty Beans, man! I'm thankful I never got those.
Do you guys ever have a yo-yo phase?
Yeah, but I stunk at it, so I quickly gave up.
There was like two yo-yo phases during my childhood. Like once in fifth grade, everybody was obsessed with the Dunkin' fireballs.
Yeah, fireballs are sick.
Yeah, everybody loved the Dunkin' fireball. I had to have one of those. And then there's another yo-yo phase in seventh grade. I didn't get that one. So fucking that phase should be just taking a swig of Jaeger from your parents' liquor cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
Dunkin' fireball. Jaeger? I don't know. But that's that. Isn't that what like everybody does when they're in seventh grade? Where they're just like, I want to know what alcohol tastes like. I'm
going to
sneak a swig of Jägermeister. That's what I do. Oh,
I sipped my cousin's grandparents. So whatever. I'm not gonna explain it. I sipped a thing of wine when I was like six, thinking it was Diet Coke, and it was a jarring experience.
Mm-hmm. I think I did the same thing once.
I think that's why I don't like red wine to this day.
Did Dunkin' discontinue the Fireball? How dare they?
Somebody in our office had a. Remember fidget spinners?
That was cool for a couple minutes.
Oh shit, dude! That was 2016. Everybody forgets about that whole thing.
I have one of those. I think still in my drawer in my apartment somewhere.
Remember when people were trying to make the argument that they were good for like kids?
Mental health, yeah.
So they, yeah.
If you don't like fidget spinners, you're not mental health positive, you asshole.
And then everybody just got tired of them and like, actually, I don't really need that for my mental health anymore.
They actually don't do shit.
Turns out nothing can really improve my mental health with this terrifying backdrop of constant 24/7 internet connectivity we live in now.
Turns out that makes everything much worse.
We live on Skynet. Fidget spinner's not going to help me here.
Mm-mm. The Ken Jack one Kinect roller coaster for the audience number two.
Oh, I want to Kinect so bad. I never
very cool. Either. Was very cool. I will say that. I never like had the want for one, but they were cool. Number one Trill.
It's Power Wheels Bigfoot with the KC lights. Never had Power Wheels. Daughter has Power Wheels because Power Wheels are cheap as hell now. Like Power Wheels was something back in like 91 that I think was like $500 in 91 money. I'm just making that money. I'm making that up. Like Power Wheels weren't easily affordable. Now you get Power Wheels super cheap now, or like knockoff Power Wheels from Amazon.
They used like a fucking nuclear powered battery in those old Power Wheels. Now it's just like a fucking little a D battery is able to power the entire thing.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I remember even like RC cars, you would charge a battery for 17 hours and
5 minutes,
7 minutes of RC car action.
Dude, the fucking old Power Wheels. I remember my friend had one. It would die. Like we charge it overnight and it would last at maximum 45 minutes. Like, and if you're lucky, yeah, they stored cold too.
We used to, like when we were like 12 and like could basically squeeze into my friend's little brother's Power Wheels. It wasn't like, it was like a Jeep one. We put it on like metal pans in the snow. And then we just fucking glid down a hill. And it always like goes sideways and you tip over. It was really fun.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Wait, what would you rather though? Bigfoot one or a Gravedigger one?
The Bigfoot, dude. I'm a Bigfoot guy.
I'm a Gravedigger guy.
Gravedigger's a hoe.
No, Gravedigger's a poser, but I like him. He's a winner.
You know there's like 7 Gravedigger trucks?
I know, right? Isn't that's fucking stupid. I hate that. I hate that was revealed to me by Twitter.
I don't know. I was looking it up like online, like all the monster truck, because they run like, you know, multiple shows across the country. Mm-hmm. Like there's like 7 Gravedigger trucks. There should be one. There should be the Gravedigger truck. There should be the Bigfoot. It shouldn't be that hard. It should be a big deal. When I go see Taylor Swift perform, I shouldn't get a body double. I want Taylor Swift. I want to see her sing.
Exactly. It's like getting ripped off. It's not even the same driver. It's some other guy.
Imagine showing up to see like WWE, like a live show that's not televised. And they send out, it's like Batista. It's just some dude who kind of looks like Batista, but is fat.
John Cena. What? Wait, say it again? No.
Well, do you remember Goldberg?
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, the skinny Goldberg.
Yes.
They'd just get the shit beat out of him.
Yeah.
That ruled. That was, what do you call it? That was Vince. It was like a response to Goldberg.
Yep. That's funny.
Those are the days. Great entrance music Goldberg had.
Oh, dude. That was the only thing he had.
The spear, okay, he had a good spear.
He had a good spear, too.
Big-ass traps. He had a good look going for him. All right, who's next?
You, last one.
All right, my last one I'm going to pick, and this is a very specific type of Hot Wheel. It's a Hot Wheels track with the accelerator, and it made, like, essentially a figure eight. And I had Hot Wheels, and I had Hot Wheels tracks, but my mom would refuse to buy the one with the accelerator that would make the car go faster and, like, just keeps going and going and going and going faster. So, like, you basically didn't have to keep throwing it down the track by yourself manually. She refused to buy it, and I wanted it more than anything because what she did get us was this game called Hot Wheels Stunt Track Driver, which is fucking incredible. It was like a PC game where you essentially just drove as, like, what do you call it, Hot Wheel cars on all these tracks. It was like Gran Turismo, if you will, except you're the size of tiny cars and you're driving through bedrooms. And it made me want the accelerator so bad, and she just refused to get it. She's like, it costs too much. I'm not buying it. You have the Hot Wheels already. You have Hot Wheels at home. Except Hot Wheels at home was me and my brothers just throwing them on the track. Not fun.
They're just matchboxes, like literal matchbox cars.
Yeah. Just a matchbox with a tiny wheel on it made out of buttons. It was awful. I wanted it so bad. Hot Wheels cars were sick. The die-cast ones, they'd always be like, die-cast. And I'm like, I don't know what that means, but it sounds cool.
There was an old place in Connecticut, New England, maybe a pizza chain called Randy's Worcester Street Pizza, and they used to give you a Hot Wheels car at the end of the meal.
With that your is receipt. Very generous.
Yeah. I had them lined up all around the place. Jesus. Pretty mediocre pizza. It's like just okay. What else? I think just me and the audience. I went with really shitty toys, and now I'm going with a sidekick. I'm going to go up a level. I wanted a sidekick so bad. Really wanted a sidekick.
What, like a Nokia sidekick?
Like a hip top. Yeah.
I wanted one too. I had T-Mobile too.
I didn't have. So I'm like pretty. I'm a tech savvy guy. Like I love having the new tech. You know, Trill and I watched the Tim Cook shell out the products.
Oh, is that this week?
Yes and no. It's for the iPad and the watch because they delayed the phone to next month.
Dude, yeah. I need a new phone. It's been 2 years.
Yeah, this is the phone I get now. Anyway, I actually didn't have like texting till like my junior year of high school, like 2008, because my parents just didn't let me have texting. And I had a shitty phone. I was like, I want my first phone to be the sidekick. And then I ended up just getting the first iPhone. Which was fine. Then jailbroke it, had Brick Breaker Extreme or Tap Tap Revolution on my jailbroken iPhone. But no, I wanted a sidekick. I had one friend who had a sidekick. She was cool, much cooler than all of us.
What could you do on a sidekick?
You just type.
You guys got the keyboard. It was the keyboard, right?
Dude, but yeah. I remember I went to the T-Mobile store to try one out, and like even then, like my fingers are too fat. They're really tiny buttons, man. It's hard. It's hard to type on them.
I remember when I was like, you know, kind of like, I don't know, when I was like 5 to 8 years into my career, like, you know, when you got past like the junior phase or whatever and got into like management or whatever, the big thing was getting a BlackBerry.
Yeah.
Like getting a company BlackBerry. It was such a power move to have two phones, personal phone and a BlackBerry. And now like BlackBerry, I know they exist. I don't know in what capability. But everybody just uses their own personal phone and gets reimbursed. If some people don't get, a lot of people probably don't get reimbursed.
Do you remember they made a BlackBerry app, right? For iPhone or something?
Yeah. Well, I mean, most like companies either have their own app or have like a third party app that handles all that from like a security standpoint, but it's still weird. The reason I say it is weird because like 10 years ago, I'd be like, I'll never have my work and personal stuff on my same phone. It just seems like an invasion of whatever. And then now I've just been beaten down to the point where it's like, yeah, well, it's easier. So, you know, might as well. I don't have any principles anymore is what I'm trying to say.
Damn shame.
Audience, last one is Heelys.
Never really understood Heelys too much. And at least the craze around them. Just because they didn't seem very fun.
There was these things called soap shoes when I was a tween. There were shoes with a grind plate in the middle.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to send you a picture. And they were like the proto Heelys, right? Like the It's like for thinking about people who want to aggressively walk, like freestyle walk, but we have not yet come up with the technology to put wheels into shoes yet. So they had this like plastic grind plate on them, so you could execute skate tricks.
That's so dumb. Oh my god. It's like a fucking bottle opener on your shoes.
It's ridiculous, man.
Other things in the list, N-Gage, Zune.
Yeah, Zune I never wanted. Not
Creepy
one.
Crawler's Workshop, that little oven that you would bake like the goo and they would turn into like rubber insects. Sega Dreamcast, Roboraptor.
Spider-Man Web Blaster I wanted really bad.
Yes, that was on there too. Moon Shoes, the Thomas the Tank Engine multi-garage with a turntable, which, yes.
Cool. Yeah.
Those Thomas Tank Engine toys were awesome. Megazord toy, electric scooter. I never had an electric scooter like want.
The one thing I was barely missed my list too was just literally Play-Doh, because when my parents were super poor when I was a little bit younger, we would make what we called poor people Play-Doh, which was flour, salt, and water, because it essentially made the same consistency as Play-Doh. And if you put food dye in it, it just made different colors, and that's what we would play with. It was literally flour, salt, and water, and that's it. And that was just Play-Doh.
Foam. You needed foam is what you really needed.
All you needed was the beads.
You just needed foam. All right. We like nostalgia. Anything else?
I was going to say something, but I just completely forgot.
Okay.
I thought I could buy myself some time to remember, but I wasn't able to get there, Jeff. I'm sorry.
That's fine. We're not gonna.
I can look in my. Well, I'm gonna look at my email to see what companies have been emailing me today, because companies are getting very thirsty. They've been very thirsty, like especially the direct to consumer brands, like the products that haven't gone on sale traditionally have gone on sale, which you can certainly understand as folks' discretionary income has been decimated, and the companies are hurting as well, but. I've been enjoying that, like, because I won't necessarily buy something, but I'll bookmark it. I'll be like, yeah, I might like to buy like this like luxury toothbrush that was like $90 and now it's $45 and limited time thing, but I won't actually do it. It's nice to have the option.
Think about this week. Maybe you'll get it.
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe I'll just continue brushing my teeth with Wisps exclusively. I'm actually going to the dentist on Friday.
Oh, fuck. I hated the dentist so much.
Yeah, I hate it too, but I was going to go in March at my 6 month. And the COVID thing happened. You guys hear about that one?
Yeah.
That whole thing, I didn't want to go to the dentist. Now I'm to the point where I'm like, well, I probably should go.
Your fucking pearly whites are going to about to get scraped big time.
Well, and I'm an ice cruncher, as you know, so I'm sure the enamel on my teeth have just been completely like varnished.
Those were the days. Listening to Ninja while we played Fortnite and you chewed on ice. Just
crunched ice.
You just broke your teeth into shreds.
Fun fact, though, before I was diagnosed with celiac and I was eating gluten, I crunched ice a lot more. And the doctor was saying ever since my stomach's kind of healed up, like my iron levels have been more normal, and therefore I've craved like crunching it less.
Oh, so, interesting.
You're making fun of me, but I had a fucking medical condition, Jeff.
The fidget spinner all over again.
I'm just kidding. I still like to crunch ice sometimes, but I don't do it as much because I don't crave it as much.
Yeah, you're a nice guy. That's
I'm a nice guy.
We're not going to deny that. He's a big ice guy.
Mr. Cool Ice.
Yeah.
You ever like, you ever just like rolling up to a convenience store that has both the cube ice and the nugget ice, and you're just like, I never would get the cubed ice here, but I like having the option.
I don't think I've ever experienced that. I've only ever seen one option for ice.
Really? You never been to like a mega, like Jeff, you've been to a Bucky's.
Yeah. Bucky's is insane.
Yeah.
I've seen ones with like crushed or full ice. Not.
Yeah, but it's like anytime you get the option, you're going to do the nugget ice. It's just – it's nice having the option as a consumer. Yeah. I mean, it's in the podcast.
I did tweet these out. Do you guys remember Crazy Bones?
Yes.
Yeah.
Crazy. I just tweeted out some video, Jeff. I think that'll unlock a section of your brain.
Crazy Bone, did it for me. Busy Bone, all the Bone Thugs. I was a big fan.
Well, Nick, our good friend Nick replied saying nothing felt like the moment you opened up a pack of Crazy Bones and got James Bone. What's the name of one of them?
I got David Boreanaz in mine.
Oh, is this, what is this? Is no, don't say it. It's the I watched this fucking intro the other day. It's no, they're in the museum. There's the parrot, there's the camel, the waterfall. People are screaming, they know what it is. Fuck, this is gonna kill me. I gotta get it before the title pops up. There goes the
there's
tiger.
No title. I purposely made it with no title.
Gator Golf.
Oh my god, what is this?
What is it again?
It's a series of videos.
I don't think Trill would have seen it. It might be a little past his time.
And I can hear the theme song. Oh my god, what is it?
It's Eyewitness. Like almost like the book series. Remember those?
This, I'm gonna play the song for those who don't know what I'm talking about. This, it's iconic, the song.
Yep.
You knew some shit was going down when you heard that.
I tried to play that on the recorder. Couldn't do it.
God. I would love that shit.
All right, well, there it is. That's we. I said we needed a nostalgia episode. We got it.
I like
ladies
it.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got it. All right, happy NFL. If your team won, if not, whatever. I'd say it gets better, but I don't think it does.
It doesn't. Your team probably didn't win.
Chances are, if you're not a fan of these three teams, your team might have won. But one of our teams did win, so.
Ooh, what if that's what we did? Now. We didn't deserve that win, though. I'm sorry to all you Cincy fans.
Not at all. Poor Joe Burrow. Well, he did throw a pretty shitty interception, so I'm not going to
totally that was a good first on. Game.
Yeah, good for him. No, seriously, good for him. I like Joe. It'd be very hard to root against Joe Burrow. Very hard as a Browns fan because I like everything about Joe Burrow. But he did have a very funny face when they missed the kick and he lost. His first loss in like 2 years. Mm-hmm. He's just like, fuck. God damn it. Must be a really jarring feeling when you haven't lost in that long and you haven't thrown a pick in almost 12 months. It's like, fuck.
Well, yeah, Peyton Manning had some quote about how he only lost 5 times in between high school and college. Maybe I under-exaggerated the number. And then his first Colt season, he lost 13.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be just absolutely insane to deal with.
The fact that Burrow and Bosa were at Ohio State at the same time really blew my brain for a second, too, when they were talking about that.
Yeah. Well, that's transfer rules there for you.
Not only to be an NFL player, but also to make some great direct-to-consumer couches. Got a hand it to the guy.
That's it. Thursday, we're going to be doing... fuck. We said we don't know, right?
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we got to think. I'm sorry. I know someone got really mad the other day. I mean, by mad, they didn't really get that mad. So I'm just messing with you. But they were like, they never know what they're going to review. You're right. We don't. I want movies back.
We'll figure it out tomorrow.
This pod was never supposed to be a pod that reviewed old shit.
Let's dedicate it. We'll figure it out by EOD tomorrow.
So long as I get the New Mutants screener, we're going to do New Mutants, which I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
All right. That's it. Ken Jack Control. I'm Biffle. I'll talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office.